out.
It is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin, curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal. Down the ice. Score! Bertrand Brodeur!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast. Continuing along with our analytics series. Last week we didn't have Ryan on. We had Dawson talking about war. Ryan was 2 weeks ago. This week, we've got one of Dawson's coworkers. We had Matt on as well. We had Dawson. Now it's part three of our Winner's View interview series. It's Manny or Emmanuel Perry. Manny, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, man. How you doing?
I am fantastic. I've been chasing you down for a while now, so it's good to get you back onto this. You were the first guest I reached out to for this series. You know, when I was thinking about people that I needed to have on this series for influencers in the hockey analytics community, you're the first name that popped to mind, so I'm glad that you are here. I have so much to get to with you today, but I'm going to start off with the same two questions I start each of the episodes off of, which is, if you had to explain to someone who is new to the series or to the community, what are hockey analytics? You know, where are we? Where have we come from? And what do you think is next for them?
So people might not like to hear it, especially people that are actively doing work. But I would say that hockey analytics has sort of slowed down to a crawl these days. And that's not any fault, really, of people that are doing work. It's two things, really. One is that largely the data that we have access to today hasn't changed in the last decade, right? So when you think of like some of the pioneers and the first innovators, like Tor Perdy, he was using the same data that we're still using today, by and large. And there's only so long that you can look at the same picture and keep finding new elements to it, new things. The other thing is that, and again, people have debated this by saying that each time someone gets hired, a new person comes and starts to do new work. But you can't ignore the fact that some of the brightest people that have done work in hockey analytics have been hired, and they're no longer doing work publicly. So when you combine those two things, I don't think, like I said, I mean, there are still people that are doing great work, but you do have to see that, like, there's not as much innovation today as there was, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
What do you think the next big thing we're going to stumble onto is? Is it something that we can do with the data set we've got now? Or are you thinking player tracking is going to be, you know, what kickstarts that next big movement?
Well, the popular answer, and for good reason, is that, you know, we do need new data, and we're all hoping that in the near future we got some player tracking data and puck tracking. Another thing that I really believe is that hockey needs to attract more people, and you know, hockey being out of the four big sports being the least popular, I think it's fair to say, you know, we attract a smaller fraction of the bright people out there and the people that are capable of doing innovative work. And so, you know, it's not easy to increase a sport's popularity, but if we were able to attract brighter people from a number of different fields, then, you know, that would be a way to increase what we're able to do with the data we have access to today.
That's an interesting answer. You're the first one to actually bring that up, and I like that you did, because to me, that's the biggest thing. It's just finding new inventive minds, because it seems like the analytics community is constantly growing, and getting those voices heard can be so difficult. I remember when Carolyn Wilkie first stepped into that community, and she was one of the first, like, really powerful female voices in the analytics community that I can think of, at least. And she just brought such a unique perspective that just wasn't there before. It was like, how many more people are out there like her that, you know, just aren't being heard right now, that are doing fantastic work? I think that's a really interesting one. For someone getting into analytics for the first time, who would you recommend that they read? What are the sites? What are the blogs? Who are the authors? Give me the list.
So, you know, I'm obviously going to leave a few people out, and that's not because I don't like you if you're listening to this. But I would say DTM About Heart, Matt Cain, Ryan Stimson. You can go up and down the list at Hockey Graphs. and pretty much everyone that writes for that site is worth reading. I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I don't do much reading on new stuff in hockey analytics, but I do share it, and I do trust that the people doing the work are, you know, very bright people. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't go wrong with browsing hockey graphs, and anything that Dawson writes under DTM About Hart is going to be worth reading. Ditto Matt Cain.
For sure, for sure. And you can find all of those guys actually on previous episodes of this series as well. Each of them had some really fantastic things to say, so be sure to go check those out. Let's get right into this, though. The big thing that I guess you're kind of known for, and people, I guess, haven't talked about it as much recently, is your case statistic. I think it was the first big single stat or single number stat, and I really enjoyed it when I came out. I still use it, still enjoyed it. But for people who don't know what it is, what is K? How would you describe it?
So I have to stop you there and say that K is not the first all-in-one metric in hockey. There have been quite a few before that. And, you know, those are things that inspired me when I was working on K. But K, for all intents and purposes, is similar to a WAR, except you're replacing replacement level with average, more or less. And so when I talk about a player's K or a team's K, it really just means goals added above average. Is a very simplistic way to say it. The theory behind K is that rather than use one gigantic model to try to account for everything all at once, I first wanted to break down hockey into numerous components, hoping that if I could identify, you know, three or four different components that don't overlap in any way, then I could design a separate model to account for each of them and then put it back together. Now, for that to work, again, these things can't overlap because or else you're calculating the same thing twice and you're counting it twice. And so the tricky part really is, you know, what are distinct processes in hockey that lead to goals being produced? And, you know, once you've identified those processes, then it's fairly easy to model them using a specific type of regression that is sort of like optimized for that process.
And there's a huge explainer on your site, under your blog, right?
Yeah, there is. It's a little bit hidden. I tweet out the link pretty much daily now because people always ask me what K is. But there is a briefer version on the blog that you can read. And, you know, I might not do a great job at explaining it, but, I, you know, hopefully you can get a gist of it from those two pieces.
So I'm not the most mathematically inclined, and I got it, at least from the very first one, the smaller one. I tried to go through the extended version with all of the formulas and the real math behind it, and you lost me like three paragraphs in, but I tried, and that's what's important. And we'll leave a description down below in the description, or we'll leave a link, excuse me, in the description of this episode so that people don't have to go back and tweet you to it. How should people use K? You know, especially in comparison to other stats that are similar, like game score or like Dawson's WAR or goals above average or XPM.
Well, last episode you had Dawson on, and I liked his explanation of how he goes about evaluating players. And that is, you know, start with something very broad, start with something large, and then work your way down to the, you know, the finer points. And I think that's a great way to put it. I think that that's something that more people should emulate. And so K, similar to his WAR, is more of a all-inclusive metric, all-in-one. And it has flaws. It's not perfect, you know, but I think at a macroscopic level, K is very good at identifying the overall quality of a player or a team or a goalie or what have you. So starting with something like K or WAR, or ideally both, because they both have strengths and weaknesses, gives you a very good starting point to sort of pursue, you know, to find out, you know, what you want to look for. If a player struggles at K or at WAR, or, you know, ranks very low, what are the things and the rest of his numbers that can tell us why? From there, I mean, you can start to paint a very good picture, I think, but it all starts with a general idea of the quality of the player or the team.
Speaking specifically to the differences between K and WAR, what is the pros and cons of using above average versus above replacement?
Um, Well, above replacement, I think, is more useful if you're looking at substituting players in and out of teams. And if you're looking at lineup construction, it is intuitive to think if you take out this player and replace this player with something, it's more likely that you're replacing them with a replacement level player, hence the name. And so for many people, that might be a more intuitive way to think about things, because it really is the goals that they add. Because if this player were to vanish, presumably they would be replaced by, you know, a player of that caliber, not necessarily an average player. I like using average because it's very easy to look at a number and be able to parse, whether it's above or below average, if it's positive or negative, right? So if a player has a positive K, that indicates above average, and negative is below average, similar to the way you would think about relative Corsi, for instance. For me, that's a very intuitive thing, and that's something that, you know, I wanted whatever final number I came up with to be, for positive to mean above average, negative to mean below average.
Just speaking to that in general, obviously it's an average, so there's going to be a lot of those players. Do you think people underestimate just how many average players there are in the NHL and how there's, to a certain degree, nothing wrong with being an average NHL player?
Well, to your second point, yes. I think, average has become sort of a dirty word for whatever reason. And you know, in fact, people say things like this player is so average as a detriment. I don't think that's fair at all. I think being an average player obviously has its place in the league. Otherwise, there wouldn't be such a thing as average. But I think to your first point, it's more that the distribution of talent in the league is more narrow than people think. If you look at stuff like K and WAR, you'll find that lots of players group within, you know, a handful of goals of average. And it's rare to find players who contribute a win or more to their team, either negative or positive. Hockey really is a team sport. And like, if you add one star player, that might only equate to one win over a whole season. And that's nothing that surprises people. I think if you really think about it, the fact that, you know, a team is made up of that many players, it shouldn't really surprise people.
And that's a very, even if you replace the goaltender, I was looking at this just from a really basic level the other day, just looking at a goaltender like Carey Price and how many goals is he saving above average. And if each win, if you say that's, you know, 5.5 or 6 goals is one win throughout the course of the season, even then he's only getting you maybe 5 or 6 wins a season at best. And that's a fantastic goaltender. You know, that's arguably one of the best to ever play the game. And if that's all he's getting you in the standings is 10 points, which is huge. It's the difference between a playoff and not a playoff team. It does speak to the level of contributions that you're going to need from skaters who aren't playing 60 minutes a night and who aren't potentially the best to ever play the position. You know, so I think people sometimes underestimate the talent disparity in the NHL. What is something in K that maybe it doesn't encapsulate, but that you wish it did? You know, something that you're like, I wish I could account for X.
Well, you and Dawson talked about this again, and it was the whole Sedin paradox, which you could also call the Crosby-Kunitz paradox or the Weber-Yossi paradox, but players that play so frequently together that it's difficult to separate each player's impact. And when I was working on K, and this is something that I think I improved on in my research, but very early on, I would use Yossi and Weber as an example. And, you know, I would look at the ratings that were produced for each of them. And very often in the early going, K would identify one of those two as having, you know, the larger impact, and the other was basically a passenger, whether that's positive or negative. So, and most of the time it was Weber. Weber was the one who was getting all of the positives, and then Yossi, because their results together, if you remember when they were in Nashville, weren't terribly good, and so Yossi was getting diminished, you know, because of that. I think I improved on that, but I think it's still an issue. It's identifying for pairings of players that are very common, who is the driver, and how to sort of distribute that.
Now, Dawson suggested an interesting solution, which was to create a third grouping, which was that pairing, and look at just specific pairings who play that amount of time together. Are there other possible solutions, or do you think that's maybe the most intuitive one to go with?
I think that would solve the problem insofar as you wouldn't have the same problem of you know, separating two players, but then you wouldn't have the solution that you want because you're still not isolating a player's impact. And so it's solving one problem and creating another to a certain extent. Because we assume that the Sedins are basically, you know, the same person, which I don't think is that big of a stretch. you know, identifying them as a pair makes sense because then we can say, well, they're basically the same. And so this is their impact. And you can divide that equally or what have you. For something like Yossi and Weber, they're two very different players. And so if you look at the total impact of them as a pair, you know, you still haven't answered the question, how good is Shea Weber?
Makes sense. And speaking to that specifically, when you're looking at a pairing like that, how would you go about trying to decipher, you know, who really is driving that the player, or who is, you know, the player who's perhaps a bit of a passenger?
A lot of people have moved on or tried to move on from with or without you analysis. I'm not quite there yet. I think it does require a large amount of data before you can start to trust that sort of analysis, but that is still something that I use and that I rely on. You know, I think I've improved K to the point that I would trust it to tell me which of the two is better. Not necessarily to give me the exact distribution of their impact together, but if K tells me that Shea Weber was the more positive contributor on that pairing, then I would trust that. And then that sort of informs the rest of my analysis as I dig deeper.
That's fair. That's fair. Moving on a little bit to Korsica, to your site. Any plans for that for the future? New stats, perhaps, features that people don't know about that you wish they did or that they used more? I mean, I know for me, and it's so embarrassing, but I didn't realize rolling averages were a part of the site for probably a year. And then I found them one day and was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, some of that is my fault. I'm maybe not the best at promoting everything that's on the site. I really don't have too many plans for the future. I'm very busy these days, and it's difficult for me to find time to add new features. And, you know, if I do find time to work on the site, it's usually fixing something, a bug that someone has identified or that sort of thing. So I would like to get some actual K data on the site because, you know, we were just talking about K. That's not really found on the site. In fact, it's not at all. I share that with a bot on my own Twitter account. But, you know, it would be probably more sensible to have a section of the site dedicated to that. So if I do add a new feature, that's probably next on my list.
Now, I know you've mentioned this on Twitter before. There's something about K that makes it take a very long time to process on your site. That's one of the difficulties. What is it about K that makes it so computer intensive?
Well, it's not that tricky for teams or goalies. Those are a bit simpler. For players, and again, you know, I'm repeating a lot of what Dawson has said in the last podcast, but we both use a similar approach where we use regression with player identification variables. And so, you know, for each player in the league, are they on the ice for the home team? Are they on the ice for the away team? And so using the actual players as variables is an advantage because then we can simultaneously account for all of their impacts and whatever the output is, in this case, it's goals. Whatever the output is obviously a function of all of these players and other things like the strength of the home team and the away team and the score and all of this stuff. So it's very handy in accounting for all of those things. It's just extremely difficult because you're looking at, you know, thousands of variables in a regression. And that's really the tricky part. It requires a lot of memory because you're looking at not only, you know, thousands of variables, but you're looking at thousands of events, hundreds of thousands of events. Because in the Well, for instance, like K is made up of numerous components, right? And so one of them is simply the rate of shot attempts. And so we want to model the rate of, say, home shot attempts as a response to who's on the ice for the home team, who's on the ice for the away team. Now, in order to do that, I use a proportional hazards regression. And that not only requires observations of when shots are taken, but each time a player's substitution is made. And those happen so frequently that you end up with, you know, millions of rows by thousands of columns. And if you've ever worked with that large of a data set, you know that it can really slow down your computer.
Makes sense. Specifically to K game score war, what do you think is going to be next for these all-encompassing stats? What do you think is going to be something that takes them to that next level? Is it a stat that we haven't invented yet that we add in? Is it going to be accounting for something like Ryan's passing data once we have, you know, seasons of that or real-time data for that? What do you think is going to take those to the next level?
I think that the models are sound. I think something like what I'm doing and what Dawson is doing, I think that they do a good job of accounting for all the data that we can provide it. So it's a question of what data can we provide. And, you know, the more granular the data, the more information we have to supply, the better that the model is, simply put.
That's fair. On a personal note, you joined Winners View not too long ago. Congratulations on that, by the way. How is that working, you know, professionally? You are you're a professional hockey boy now. How's that?
Yeah, that's true. And I don't get the respect I deserve. it's funny that, you know, someone like, I don't know, David Staples will still reply to me on Twitter like I'm a blogger, which I never really considered myself as. But at the end of the day, we're both professional hockey analysts now. So I will not let people talk down to me anymore. it's been good. I mean, like, Winners View is a startup company, and it's still very, everything is tentative. Everything is sort of experimental. But so far it's been good. And, you know, having the chance to work with Dawson and Matt, has been great because, I mean, if I had to pick two people out of the hockey stats community to work with, it might've been those two. Maybe Micah, but he's too rich for us. can't afford him. But no. So it's been great. And working with those two is a lot of fun. And we're all hoping that Winners View will continue to create cool content and that people will like it.
I love the content you guys have been putting out. I think it's so different than everything else that's out there, especially the Fixer series. I love that series. It's just so fun. Working specifically in, I guess now, private analytics, are there certain things that you find you look at differently? Is there, you know, a way that once you, Matt, and Dawson are, you know, in a chat together or in a room together or in a call together and working on some item, are you finding that you look at things differently or that you're conceiving new ideas or new data sets?
A lot of it is about how to communicate a certain idea. And that's by virtue of working in media for the first time, really. But that's really secondary to the actual research. You know, our videos are very short, and I understand why. It's easier to consume a 90-second video or a 60-second video. What people may not realize is a lot of research goes on behind the scenes that doesn't make it on screen. So for us to be able to make that point in one sentence, it often requires, you know, hours of research and validation. And so working with Matt and Dawson, we often, compare notes and we check each other's code, for instance. And, we want to ensure that, everything we do is sound and that we agree on everything. Another skill that I think I'm developing doing this is being able to find stories in data sets. Because it's very different if you're told, you know, hey, we want to do a story on Radek Foxa and how he's producing rebounds. But what people may not realize is that Dawson and Matt and I are, in addition to doing the research, we're responsible for finding the stories to tell. we're really, you know, finding things in the data that we think might be interesting to convey to our audience. And so being able to look at a set of data and say, hey, I've found something here that I think is interesting. I think it's a valuable skill, even if I wasn't working in media.
For sure. And that's truly when you become a data analyst, is when you're able to sort through these sets of information and find players who are impacting the game in a way that's more difficult to find than just sorting through their points or sorting through their possession stats. You know, you can see the individual inputs they are creating that affect the output. You know, that's where the value of these companies comes in. And I'm interested to see how they eventually work with teams and with agents, with GMs, with coaches, because I think that's going to be a really interesting and unique relationship once these stats become a little more granular and once we've got the data for that, especially. So that'll be neat to see. On that topic, though, we've got more coming up. We're going to have an agent in a couple of weeks, probably. Also, some more private analytics people. We talked about Micah earlier in the show. Actually, recording with him later tonight. He will probably be the episode after this one goes up. So that's going to be entertaining as well. Manny, thank you for coming on. I don't think I have any more questions for you. I think you answered just about everything. Pretty timely, too. Coming up on that half-hour mark. You've nailed it today, sir. If you like Manny's work, if you think he sounds cool, if you want to read more of his stuff, and you're not following him for some reason, well, one, that's a mistake, at Manny Elk. Two, Corsica.hockey. Seriously, go on that site. It is the best hockey site we've got. Manny, I know you've put a ton of work into fixing that so it runs smoother. It is so incredibly appreciated. It has been phenomenal in the last couple months for me personally. I assume so for everybody else. Tons of stuff there. I recently discovered the combos and line pairings options about 3 months ago. That has been a revelation. If you haven't used those, go on there. There is so much information to see. Sebastian Aho is fantastic, apparently. I didn't know that for the first half of the season. So tons and tons of cool information there. Manny, am I missing anything? Am I missing a plug? At Ask Winners View, that's the other one, if you want to see their work.
That's true. Ask Winners View is the Twitter account of Winners View. Winnersview.com is the website. Many of the videos are geofenced because our markets are Dallas and Washington right now. Some of the videos, like you mentioned, the Fixers series, where we're not using footage, aren't restricted because of footage rights. So find the videos that you can watch, and hopefully you like them. My Twitter is Manny Elk. Corsica is Corsica Hockey. I have a few bots that I should maybe plug. At Corsica Story Bot tweets out stories from last night's games. At Louis the Bot tweets out daily game predictions. And I think that's it.
Can we get the what was the inspiration for Louis? Is it your cat's name?
No, Louis is my uncle's name.
Wow. He must feel pretty honored. He's a bot on Twitter.
I don't think he knows. Maybe I should tell him.
I would, you know. And by the way, I've made you on Twitter. All right. If you like this episode, you can find all of our episodes online, lastwordonhockey.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud. Just search Game Time Decision Podcast on either of those. All of our episodes up there in our regular series, in the analytics series. This comes out every Wednesday. Our regular episodes drop every Monday or Tuesday, depending on how quickly I edit them. You can find all of that stuff online. You can follow myself on Twitter at Colton Prail and the podcast at GTD_podcast. Hope you had a great day. We will see you next week.